This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. We have got a fun and tall episode for you today here on Solve It for Kids with an animal that all of us love as soon as we see them.
I totally agree because I know who this is, but what question are we solving today?
How can you recognize every giraffe in the world?
How do you recognize every giraffe in the world? Oh, I want to know the answer to this. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
So if you want to know the answer to a question as big as that, you can imagine our guest is somebody that's been doing a lot of work. Listen to this. Dr. Monica Bond is a wildlife biologist and biodiversity activist, and she works as principal scientist for the Wild Nature Institute, as well as being a research associate for the University of Zurich.
How cool! Welcome to the show, Dr. Monica.
Well, thank you very much, and hello, Jennifer, hello, Jeff, and hello to everybody out there listening.
I am so excited. And I know we say that all the time, but I love giraffes. We're going to talk all about giraffes. So I'd like to start kind of at the beginning. Like, have giraffes always been your favorite animal since you were a kid?
Well, I do have to say that I wouldn't say giraffes are my favorite. I absolutely love them and adore them. And they are definitely one of the best animals out there in the savannah. But I actually really love everything. I love all of wild nature, from the, you know, the termites to the, you know, the small things, all the way up to the big giraffes. And I'm a wildlife biologist, and I've actually done research on lots of different kinds of animals.
Oh.
I got my master's degree studying voles, which are like, they're related to lemmings. They're like little mice.
Oh, yeah.
And then I studied owls, and
now I'm studying giraffes.
Yeah, owls are pretty cool. And now, like, I graduated on to kind of bigger things with the giraffe. So, yeah, I studied from the small to the big. And, you know, every critter has its place in the ecosystem.
Yes.
And they're all important, and they're all really super cool. But I do have to say, when I tell people I studied giraffes, it gets people pretty excited in a way that when I said I studied voles, it didn't really.
I know, it was like voles. I got to remember what those are.
I can't wait to go to the zoo to see all the voles.
Voles are so important in the ecosystem.
Yes.
They like aerate the soil and their food for lots of things and everything. But giraffes also play a key role in their ecosystem. So yeah, everything's important. And the first time I went to Africa in 2005, I really did love the giraffes. I was mesmerized by them.
And so I
feel really lucky that I was able to, for the last 10 years, I've been studying giraffes in Tanzania and East Africa.
Wow.
And I just feel like I'm living the dream every day when I'm out there and seeing them. And they're really quite magnificent.
They are.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to one of the things you said about when you were studying. You got your degree in wildlife biology.
Mm-hmm.
That's wildlife. Like you said, everything down to the little bitty all the way up to the ginormous. How do you end a degree? How can you finish a degree in wildlife biology by studying so many things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So really, it's not necessarily about the animal in particular. It's about the tool. So when I go, you know, I got my master's degree and I got a PhD, and what I learned there were the tools on how to study wildlife from the small to the big.
Okay.
So I learned things like, I learned statistics. So how do I learned how to collect data and then how to process the data. What do I do with the data? You know, we go out and we count things, or we identify things, or we measure trees and things like this. And then what do you do with that? How do you learn things from it? How do you answer questions from it? So what you really learn in graduate school is in college all the way through your PhD is the tools that you need to answer key questions. And those can be used from you know, voles all the way to giraffes to answer questions of all sorts of types.
So when you look at the animals for the wildlife biology, are you looking at them in particular environments and their effect on the environments and the ecosystems and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. I think we can say we look at how they affect each other. So the relationships between individuals of the species, and then definitely how they affect the environment and how the environment affects them.
Oh, which is probably really important these days, right?
Absolutely. Because we have, as we say, it's a rapidly changing world. And that poses a lot of difficulties and challenges for wildlife. So part of what we do is try to learn what's causing these problems for them and then how we can help these animals survive in a rapidly changing world.
Okay. So you said for the last 10 years, you've been studying giraffes. I take that to mean you've learned a whole lot about them by now. So, and you already have a decade's worth of your own personal information. What can you tell us about the giraffe's place in the ecosystem?
Okay, so let's start by saying, first, I stand on the shoulders of giants, and I don't mean giant giraffes, but I mean giant scientists, people who have done research on giraffes. The first person to go formally study giraffes in the wild was a woman named Ann Innes Dagg. And she went in the late 1950s. She went to South Africa and was the first person to really methodically record data about giraffes. So there's a movie about her. They made a movie about her called The Woman Who Loves Giraffes. And she's Canadian. And so she was really young, fresh out of college, and she really loved giraffes and really wanted to study them. But back in the 50s, it wasn't so common for women to do this. And so she was writing to people in Africa saying, I would like to come over there and do some field research. And she would sign her letters, Ann Dagg, and she would inevitably get a response back saying, sorry, you know, you're a woman. We can't allow that. So she wrote letters and then signed her name A Dagg. So they didn't know her name was Ann. Somebody responded and said, sure, come on over and come study our giraffes at our reserve in South Africa. And right before she left, she wrote and said, well, I'm actually a woman. And he said, oh, whoa, you can't come. She went anyway.
Yay!
She showed up.
And it was the beginning of a lifelong friendship. She did great, really important work. She wrote books about giraffes. And to this day, I cite her papers in her research and in my research, you know, this many, many decades
later. That's fantastic.
So I stand on the shoulders of those giants of people who have been studying giraffes before me. And then what happens in science, as you know, is we read and we learn what other people have discovered, and then we build on that.
Yes.
And so we ask questions, okay, these things are unanswered. Let's, you know, use what we've learned in the past, create hypotheses, test those hypotheses, and learn new stuff. And so I read and learned about giraffes, and then for the last 10 years, I decided I wanted to study demography, which is tracking individuals. So demography is studying births, deaths, and movements. And people study human demography. So, you know, birth rates, death rates, and people, immigration and emigration. It's a whole field of study. Okay. Well, we also study demography of wildlife. And we can do this with giraffes by identifying individuals. And let me just start by saying, one of the things that is useful to know is, are populations increasing or decreasing?
Yes.
And then we can see, like, what kind of problems do they have? Are the numbers going up or down?
Right.
And the next question we want to ask is, if numbers are going up and down, why?
Yeah.
So when you're out there, you can count giraffes. You can just go out there and count every year and say, well, you know, their numbers overall are either going up or down.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily tell you why. So maybe it's that if their numbers are going down, maybe it's because babies aren't being born. Maybe they're not producing babies. Or maybe they're making babies, but those babies aren't surviving.
Right.
Or maybe the adults aren't surviving, and that's causing the population to go down. So doing demography and identifying individuals of different ages and sexes, then you can really understand deeply why a population here might be doing well, why this one might not be doing well, and why. That's the basic study of demography, and we wanted to do that for a population in Tanzania that is strongly influenced by people. So we're studying giraffes in Tarangire National Park and Lake Manyara National Park and lands in between. So this is a region in Tanzania that has two sort of smallish parks compared to some of the other parks in Tanzania.
Right.
And they are surrounded by village lands. And so we have different gradients of like human influences.
Mm-hmm.
And even within the human influences, you have towns with concrete houses and farms and this kind of thing. And then you have traditional nomadic pastoralists who are cattle herders. The Maasai people. So it's like an indigenous tribe of people called the Maasai, and they just herd cattle and they build houses out of cow dung and mud and grass.
Right.
And,
yes.
they're not permanent and they can move around. So they move around with their cows to wherever the grass is good. And so you have those sort of dwellings for these indigenous cattle herder people. And then you have towns that are more permanent with, like I say, farms. And sometimes in those towns, you have people who kill giraffes for the meat. And so we kind of wanted to understand how giraffes are doing when they're close to towns versus close to these traditional cattle herders versus deep in the heart of the national parks where they're not influenced by people. And so that's why we chose this research area in Tarangire, and we've learned a lot over the last 10 years.
Yeah. So are these two parks connected so that the two different populations can, they can cross boundaries and whatever, or are they segmented because of the towns or the cities?
That's an excellent question, Jennifer. So the whole landscape is unfenced, so they can go anywhere they want, but between these parks is village lands where people live.
Yes.
So they have to cross through. And we talk to people, you know, there's giraffes that walk right by their houses.
They got to cut them down.
They
go visit their buddies.
Giraffes right in the backyard. It's really funny because there's also roads separating these two parks. And they have, you know how here in the U.S. we might have a sign like deer crossing?
Yes.
They have signs that say giraffe crossing. They're like, slow down, giraffe crossing. It's really funny to see.
Oh, my gosh.
So I always thought it was cool. I took a picture of the giraffe crossing sign and it's just funny. But like giraffes literally cross by there. And of course, you know, if you're speeding and you hit a giraffe, neither of you is going to do very well. The car's not going to do well. The giraffe's not going to do well.
No.
So yeah, you really got to watch out there. But yeah, there's all sorts of things. And, you know, not just giraffes, but elephants and zebras and wildebeests and lions. There's many, many amazing African wildlife that share the savanna with the giraffes. And so when we're working to understand giraffes and try to conserve their habitat and the connectivity between habitats through village lands, we're also helping lots of other animals too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you've been studying these giraffes 10 years. Before we get back into the information about the giraffes, can you tell us a little bit about living in Tanzania in this area? Obviously, it's much different than Jennifer's Florida or my Colorado.
Yep. So I've been living there 10 years. And when we're out there doing our research, we go camping. So that's always exciting.
Okay.
We drive around. We start in the morning. So Tanzania is just south of the equator. So what that means is that every day is pretty much the same length. So we're always like up. The sun comes up almost the same. It's like a difference of 12 minutes throughout the year, something like that. So basically, it's always the same sunrise, the same sunset. So it's very regular when we can do our surveys. We go out there, we camp, we wake up, we start work at a little bit before 7 in the morning, and we drive around all day following the same roads. So we go the same way every time looking for giraffes all the way for about 10 hours. And then we're done at about 6 or so.
Wow.
And then we make a little dinner and we watch the sunset. And then we usually go to bed as soon as it's dark because it gets a little more dangerous out there once the nighttime comes.
I would think so.
Yeah, we have had lions and things like that come right through our camp, so we have to be a bit careful. But it's it's fun, and I haven't felt hugely threatened, so that's good.
I don't know that I'd be okay with a lion walking through the. You're in little canvas tents, right? That might make me nervous.
Yeah. So as it starts to get dark, we're constantly looking around. We make sure to camp in an area where the grass is short. You can't camp where the grass is long because anything can sneak up on you.
Yes.
So we have searched for that. And then we always have our flashlights and we look around like every few minutes just to make sure nothing's coming up at us. And then we zip into the tent and all is well. And then we get up in the morning and make a little breakfast and hit the road again. And we're driving these little sort of dirt tracks and we're looking for giraffes. And whenever we see a group of giraffes or a single giraffe, we have permission to drive off road and we go to the group or the individual and we take pictures. And I guess maybe we should probably go to my question that I.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say. So when you're driving around, you know, you can look at the giraffe and go, that's like, you know, I don't know. Do you name them like Sam or something? I mean, how do you know who the giraffe is?
So many people ask us that, but we actually have a little bit sort of too many to be able to name. So the question that I had, or the question we try to answer, is how do you identify every single giraffe in the world?
Yeah.
So giraffes have these beautiful spot patterns, and every single giraffe is unique. Their spot pattern is unique.
Everyone? Every like not even with, within a family. Like it's
everyone
all
everyone in the whole world. Yep. And it's the same pattern from when they were born, tiny little baby, from the day they're born all the way till the day they die. It doesn't change at all.
Oh my gosh.
And I want listeners to look at their thumb and their finger, like the pads of their thumb and finger, and you see those little swirls of skin.
Yep.
That's your thumbprint and your fingerprint. So every single human being has a different thumbprint. It's a different pattern of swirls. And so that's exactly like with giraffes. That's how we can identify every individual. And so it does it all across Africa. Giraffes are only found in Africa, except for if they're in a zoo. We'll put a pin in that and come back to But they're only found in the wild in sub-Saharan Africa at this point. And every single one will have a unique spot pattern. And so we can go out there and we take pictures. And both sides of the giraffe are different. So you have to take the same side every time. We just happen to choose the right side of the giraffe. So we drive there and we have to get the right side. So sometimes we have to nudge them a little bit to turn. And then we get a picture. We get the whole picture, the whole giraffe from the top of the ossicones. They're not horns, actually. They're called ossicones because they're sort of bones covered with hair, all the way down to the bottom of their hoof if we can. And so we get a picture of the whole thing. And that's because we use the information from the pixels of the camera and the distance from the camera to the giraffe. It's called photogrammetry. We get a distance from the camera to the giraffe and we count pixels on the photo on the computer and we can get their height.
What?
So it's called photogrammetry. It's a cool way that you can get measurements.
Awesome.
You can measure things about animals just from photographs, but using digital photographs.
Wow.
And so we start with getting the whole giraffe top to bottom and then we measure them and then we can then later on, because we have a distance from the camera to the giraffe and a focal length of the lens, we can then measure and we can get how tall they are. And that we use to get their ages and also growth rates.
Their ages?
Yeah, because they're constantly growing. So you can say, you know, if they're this tall, we guess they're about this age. And we have growth curve.
Okay.
Ages. So we can,
I didn't
we
know
can get
that.
Their age within a few months. And that's helpful, right? So we'll know their ages pretty well, but without having to guess. And then we have to crop every photo down to just the torso, just the body, because we have pattern matching software on the computer that matches the pattern of that giraffe to previous pictures we've taken. So we don't have to do this by eye. This is called big data, you know?
And yes.
Yeah, it's called big data because we have, for every survey, we take between 1,000 and 1,500 photos of giraffes.
Whoa, so you don't want to do that. All by yourself.
You don't want to count those.
No. And back in the day, before there was digital photography, then people would obviously need to do this by eye. So sometimes they would draw the pattern or they would have to like take a picture and print it out. Probably none of the listeners will know anything about film photography. They only know digital. But now, you know,
I remember.
Yeah, me too. I remember too. But luckily, since we started doing this work 10 years ago, we had digital photography, which has enabled us to be able to go out there and sample as many giraffes as we want. You know, we're not limited by having to like, you know, draw the picture of the spot pattern or print out footage. We can just, you know, just as many megabytes as fit on our computer and our camera. And then we can crop the picture. And then we have this program called Wild ID, but there's other ones you can use too that will match the picture to the previous ones. And the reason you have to cut out all the back is because this pattern recognition software doesn't know what's a giraffe pattern versus like the background trees or bushes or something. And we also created a program that recognizes the giraffe in the picture and cuts it down to the torso for us. So it used AI.
I was going to say AI. There you go.
Yep.
Excellent.
We gave it some training photos. This was Microsoft AI for Earth. They partnered with us to help us because we were cropping all of these pictures by our
hands.
That's
still a lot.
My wrist. Yeah, it would be like weeks that we would have to use my mouse and on the computer and I have to crop the picture each time. And so we're like, this is ridiculous. And we had this wonderful partnership with Microsoft and they said, what do you guys need? And we said, this is what we need. And they helped us develop a program that we could just feed the photos in.
That's and fantastic.
Technology's
out.
Wonderful.
It's wonderful. And so that's like one great way of partnering with these tech whizzes who know all this kind of like wonderful stuff that they can do to help us out in the field.
Yeah. So with all these photos and all this information, you've told us you can find the relative age of the giraffes. What other information can you tell?
Okay, so we know they're individuals. And that means for every time we go out and do a survey, and we do 6 surveys per year, if we saw the giraffe, that survey gets a 1 for that individual. And if we didn't see it, it gets a 0. And the output that's spit out is we have a big database with a row for every individual. And sure, you know, Jennifer, if we wanted to name them, instead of having numbers, right now we have numbers, like 1 through, right now we have about 4,500.
Oh, that's a lot of names.
If you can
help us come up with names, I can start with a Jennifer and then we'll have a Jeff. And then
there you go. There you go.
But yeah, so we have numbers for them. And then each one has a row and it has an encounter history, meaning, like I said, for every survey, it either gets a 0 or a 1. And sometimes we don't see them, but we know they're out there. And so what our statistics can do is when we want to look at survival rates, it uses the information about how sometimes we don't see them, but we know they're there because later on we got a 1 for them. And it gives us a better estimate of survival rates because ultimately that's what we want to know is survival rates. And then also whenever we're out there, we have a GPS location for the individual and the group and who's in the group with it. So we can plot them on a map and we can get their movement. So we can get their whole ranges, you know, like where are they going seasonally? Where are they moving around? How big of an area do they use? And then every time we see them, we can see who they're with, who's in the group with them. So who are their friends and who are sharing the same space with them, but they don't actually hang out together. We're able to look at social relationships. And back when we were talking about, you know, in your wildlife biology, you want to know about, you know, relationships between individuals of the same species and then interactions with the environment. We can do all sorts of cool things and learn things about who they're hanging out with and why, and whether they're sort of related to each other. Wow. Or even now we're actually looking at females and whether they hang out with other females who have similar spot pattern types as them. And we found that they do.
I'm wearing the same clothes as her. So
exactly. Yeah, I can, and maybe they can recognize each other and this kind of thing. So there's all sorts of things you can do. If you can track individuals, you can really, really learn a lot about them. So
then you can figure out, I guess, of course, which ones are the babies and who the mothers are and the fathers too. Do giraffes all travel together? Or is it just the mother and the baby?
Okay, so that's a very good question. Giraffes actually have what we call a fission-fusion dynamic. So they have these loose sort of herds that constantly merge and split with each other. Oh, so they're not stable groups. So zebras, for example, will have a really stable group. You have these females, they call them mares, and then you have a stallion that keeps away all the other stallions, and that's his group of females. And there's, you know, like 5 or 7 or so, and it's like females with their babies and the male. So the giraffes aren't like that. They merge and split with their groups, so they're really not seen with the same individuals constantly all the time.
Okay.
And they wander really long distances. Their food is kind of spread out, and so they can kind of split off to go find food and then come back together again. And it's really cool because you see that females will help each other. If some female mamas want to go off and maybe the good food and water is kind of far away and their babies are small and have a hard time keeping up, the babies can stay in one place and you have some babysitters. You have one female or a couple others who will watch the babies, and then other moms will be off somewhere getting maybe food and water. And so the babies don't have to go travel like really long distances with everybody else. And it's
That's
cute
so
because
cool.
sometimes people would think that giraffes are not very good mothers because they'll come across a group of babies and there's like no mothers there with them, or there's just like one. They're the moms. But somebody's watching them, believe me. Somebody will be watching them. And it's possible even that they might be communicating over very long distances using infrasound that we can't hear. We know that elephants do this. And so that's a cool area that might be ripe for research, is whether, you know, even if they're kind of far away, a few kilometers away, maybe they're even still staying in touch through these long distance sounds that we humans can't hear. But So anyway, you
never
don't always
see
them
that's
together.
Cool.
But over 10 years of collecting data and seeing who tends to be in groups together, you can start to understand who are friends with each other and then who are sharing the same space, but we never see them together. So even if they're not always together in the same tight group, you can basically build a database of their friendships too. So you see like these females, we see them more often together. So they're not always together, they're more often together. So they're better friends. And then these ones, they could be in the same place, but not at the same time. So they are sharing space, but not together.
Okay.
So over time, we've been able to look at social structure and we've discovered that females have these social communities, about 60 to 90 other individuals that they spend time with.
Right.
Some they spend more time with and others less. And those 60 to 90 females of these social communities can overlap with other social communities, but they don't intermix.
Okay.
So it's really cool. They have a lot of structure. Yeah.
You have so much information about them already. Oh my gosh. So that leads me to, if you were to study giraffes for the next 10 years, what questions are you going to be trying to answer for the next 10 years? What more do you want to learn?
Yeah, that's a really great question too. So some of our future research entails, I'm now interested in climate effects on their survival.
Right.
And so we want to know, we needed a long enough period of time to have fluctuation in the environment, right? You can't do this. You only have a couple of years of data, but now we have 10 years. And we have 10 years of sometimes we have rainfall is higher than normal. Sometimes it's lower. Sometimes temperatures are higher, sometimes lower. And we have different seasons. And so our analyses that we're planning on doing now are to look at how, what happens if you have a season of more higher rainfall or a season of low rainfall, maybe a drought, or when it's quite really hot or really cool, how does this affect the survival of the calves and the survival of the adults? And of course, you know, that's very, very timely information.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
But we needed a long period of time to be able to determine those, you know, be able to study that. And we also are, because we use the spot patterns to identify individuals, we are really interested in spots. Why do giraffes have spots? What's the function of these? Think about giraffe spots.
Okay.
They are unlike any other mammal. I mean, you have sort of, certainly you have leopard spots, you have tiger stripes, you know, you have other animals that have spots, but nothing quite like a giraffe.
No.
And it's interesting. There's, you know, there's some hypotheses out there about why there's, they have a lot of blood vessels under each spot. So maybe it's something with thermoregulation, but we're not sure about that because they have other ways of thermoregulating. Maybe it's for individual identification. Maybe they can recognize each other by spots or at least recognize relatives. We found in our research that certain aspects of the spots, like how round they are and how solid the spots are actually heritable from the mothers to the young. We don't know about the fathers because I mentioned that too. You asked Jennifer about the dads. So you have these female groups, the males, they don't stick around. So they will mate, but then they'll move around among lots of different female groups. So you don't know who the fathers are and they're not there with the females. The females are the ones that have sort of stronger relationships and they merge and split and the males kind of wander around and they look for females who want to mate with them or who are available for mating, will mate with them. And so the males just have to go, you know, their lives are just roaming all around looking for, you know, hoping they're in luck, finding a female who might and that there's not a bigger male around who can kick them. So there's a lot of competition there. But we want to know, you know, heritability of spots we know from the moms, maybe from the dads too. And that's where the zoo populations come in. We know who the dads are.
Oh, yeah.
From the zoos. And so we're actually, some of our research right now is looking at heritability of spots to the fathers too.
Okay.
And one, so I sort of leave the last one to the end, but we really think that camouflage is a big reason for the giraffes to have these spots because it really it breaks up their solid silhouette. And so especially in little calves, they don't thermoregulate very well. They hide in the bushes for the first few weeks of life.
Okay.
And so it might break up their background and help camouflage them amongst the bushes. And we actually found that certain spot types have higher survival for the calves than other spot types. So that was interesting. We do think there's some camouflage involved in there. So there's possible many functions of these spot patterns. And that's kind of an avenue of our future research.
I mean,
interesting the questions you think to ask to find the information to answer.
Yeah. And it's because we're out there constantly and these questions come to mind. So like, ooh, you know, what about this? What about that? We watch their behavior and, you know, questions build on each other. And also like talking with other giraffe people who study giraffes, new questions come about and we figure out ways we can collaborate to better understand giraffes. Yeah.
I think it's the more you learn, the more questions you have, right?
That's absolutely right. Like, it never ends. That's
exactly. And that's the amazing thing about science. And that's, we've had so many scientists and engineers on the show talk about that. Is we've learned this, but now we have five more questions based on what we learned.
That's
or
right.
10
that's
or 15.
Exactly. Yep.
So we're never going to be done studying because, you know, and sometimes you learn that what you thought was right is not.
That's
and you're proven wrong. And, or, you know.
Absolutely right. Yep.
So we have reached that point in our show where we are going to ask you if you have a challenge for our listeners. I'm curious to see what your challenge is, Dr. Monica.
Great. Okay. So I mentioned every giraffe has a unique spot pattern. I mentioned a couple of other animals that also have sort of unique patterns to them, not spots, but stripes, for example, zebras and tigers. Well, my challenge to the listeners out there is to do a bit of research and come up with five different species that have unique patterns. And it doesn't have to be mammals. There's definitely other mammals out there, but other kinds of animals that have unique patterns that are unique to every individual, and that you could do a similar kind of study that we do with giraffes. You can identify individuals and learn about them by their unique patterns. So come up with five of them.
That sounds like a great challenge.
I like that. And the fact that you jumped right into, you don't have to stick with mammals. My brain goes straight into the ocean or up in the air with birds or fish. This is going to be fun.
Yep. Yeah. Or snakes, Jeff. Yes. I thought of snakes.
Absolutely right. Yep.
Of course you did, Jennifer.
Yep. And I know you love snakes. I know you love snakes. I heard that podcast with the
snakes. Oh, yeah. I'm such a fan. From a distance, through a glass window. Now, the giraffes at our zoo, you can actually feed the giraffes. And that's what, you know, what I love to do, because they are amazing animals, I think. But this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids,
Dr. Monica.
Dr. Monica,
thank you so much for squeezing us in, listeners, before she hops back on a plane to Tanzania yet again.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a delight. I love the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
What a fun chat. Who doesn't like giraffes? And the idea of being able to identify every giraffe by its pattern, I was super skeptical coming in, but that was a lot of fun.
That was tons of fun. And now I cannot wait to go to the zoo and look at the animals and see if I can identify the different giraffes based on their spots. Right? I mean, that's going to be
exactly.
so much fun.
I'm in Colorado Springs. We have a really cool zoo. And the first thing you see is giraffes. The next time I bring my daughter there, we're going to see the giraffes first. I'm studying the spots. And then we're going to go do the whole zoo. And then we're going to come back. And I'm going to quiz myself and see if I can figure out which one is Charlie and which one is Jasmine, which one's Benjamin. Because, you know, obviously I'm going to name them.
Well, of course you are. I mean, that was my question, right? You should just name all these. And Dr. Monica's kind of like, there's hundreds of them.
This was too much fun. And I love the challenge. Of course, not all of us are working where we can just go outside and see giraffes,
right.
Dr. Monica. But she gave us a challenge. We can go out and identify species that have patterns from around our own areas. That was a smart idea.
I think that is so much fun. And so we invite all of our listeners to go ahead and do that and then share with us on our social media.
Yes.
We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But we also have a special opportunity for our listeners this week because we've teamed up with Mongabay Kids. And they are a fabulous website. It's a nature and conservation corner for kids and their adults. And they are helping us celebrate World Giraffe Week this week. So go to their website and check it out. It's kids.mongabay.com. And you're going to see some really cool information about giraffes. And maybe you and I, Jeff, I think we're going to be on that website too.
I think so. And I love that World Giraffe Week is happening in the summertime for our listeners in America from school, so they can do some extra giraffe homework. They can do this challenge from Dr. Monica, and then maybe they can convince their adults to to bring them to the zoo that's closest to them and maybe get a chance to see some giraffes live and in person.
That sounds like an awesome plan. So make sure to do all that and then let us know how it goes.
Can't wait to see all of your pictures and sharing with us what you do for Dr. Monica's challenge. Until the next time, you'll hear us on
Solve It for Kids.